Okay, we're up to Perek Chav Zayin. We are up to Pasuk Tesvav. Okay, we're up to Pasuk Tesvav. Delef Toiret Biyom Sagrid. The Eishes Mid Yonim Nishtova. There are two different Mahalchim in Rashi and the Mitzudos. According to the Mitzudos, this means that on a day that it rains, a person, sagrid means to be locked up, sagur, to be put behind closed doors. Pasuk tezvav, perik chav zayin, pasuk tezvav, delef, a drip from a leaky roof, torate, it drives the people indoors insane, to listen to the constant banging. The constant banging of the drip coming from the air, from the air conditioner. Okay, but on a rainy day, they didn't have air conditioning in those days. On a rainy day, when the drip comes down, the yom sagrid that caused people to be on a day when a person anyway has to stay indoors. When do people live indoors? When it's raining outside. When it's not raining outside, people live outdoors. But that's one of the main differences between Eretz Yisrael, living in Eretz Yisrael, living in America. Living in America, you are primarily living an indoor life. In Eretz Yisrael, you are primarily living an outdoor life. That's what they tell me, at least. It's a whole different environment.
Since they've got air conditioning, it's not.
Yeah, now everyone's indoor the whole day. But like every
no. That's where you
air
live.
Conditioning, everybody's got air conditioning. In their 50s, cars.
In the '50s, the kitchen of every place
was
outside.
Where in Eretz Yisrael you live?
The kitchen.
But during the time of the year when it's nice, let's say when it's nice, in the summertime, the spring, the fall. People, I haven't been there all that much, but the time that they also got that sense that it's more of an outdoor living. You're not confined to indoors. In America, we live 99% indoors. How often do we ever go outside? Only we have to go somewhere. Trade Eretz Yisrael, more indoors now?
Yeah. Especially in the winter.
In the winter, you're totally locked up. Okay, could be. But here at least, Tam Chazal, it appears that they lived more of an outdoor life. When did a person have to confine himself to be indoors? When it's raining. When it's raining, that's called the Yom Sagrit. The day that it's raining, you have to go in behind closed doors. And on that day, when it's raining outside, and now to add insult to injury, you have the roof is leaking. And the rain is dropping, and it's driving you insane. So a person has to suffer the discomfort of listening to this drip, 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 constantly, only occasionally, only on those days when he needs to be found locked inside because the weather outside is not that good. But if a person has a Rahman al-Astana wife, what's so funny? But if a person is in trouble, has a marriage that's not pleasant, it doesn't make a difference where you are. It doesn't make a difference. She'll find you. It doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference what the situation is. It's nishtava. It's all the same. Nishtava means the different interpretations we'll see in a moment. It's all the same. Whether it's cloudy outside, whether it's beautiful outside, she'll get you. She'll find you, and she'll make your life miserable. Let's see the mitzudos tavit pasuk tezvav delef hinei tiftuf hamotar. The dripping of rain lo yatrid b'nei habayis does not disturb the people of the home ki im b'yom bo hamotar, only on the day when it's raining. Asher derech b'nei adam when it's raining, you have no choice. You have to go indoors for shelter. But then you have the problem that there's a leak in the roof and it's dripping, and the dripping causes the discomfort. The mortar drips in the bayis. The yatrid bin habayis in the kaimai lemakam, and it caused people to move about in the house. It's dripping here, dripping there. You have to go and run between the raindrops in your house. Avol kishein mortar. Oh, but let's say it's no mortar. Ain't tiftuf. The ain't torrid. But if it's not raining, then there's no dripping, and no one is torrid. And if you have to add Rashi into the mitzvah a little bit more, you're not necessarily confined to being indoors. Aval HS Midyanim, a wife that quarrels with her husband, Nishtava, V'chol ho'itim, it's all the same. It doesn't make a difference what the situation is. There's no respite. Lahatrid esbala.
Equal opportunity.
Lahatrid esbala to cause her husband to go insane. Let's see Rashi. Rashi post has vav delav toired geshem anaitiv in agag. This is a very unique word, delav. Delav is a it's a special word which means a drip from a leaky roof. It's not a borrowed term. I think it's the real meaning of the word. Geshem hanoitev min hagag l'seich habayis, rain that drips from the roof into the bayis, v'toridus min habayis, and drives the people at home insane. B'yom sagrid, yoim hageshem shakol niskodim bevotem, everyone is isolated, everyone is confined in their homes. But v'eishes midyonim nishtava, shnehem shavim. So Rashi is a little bit different than the Mitzudos. So Rashi says nishtava means that a woman who caused her husband tsar is equivalent to the tsar a person experiences when he is confined indoors and the roof is leaking and it causes him discomfort. Okay. Okay, and the Gemara, the Gemara in Yevamis, a lot of the sugyas of Noshim appear in Masechet Zan and Kiddushin. Divrei Torah aniyin b'mokim echad v'ashirin b'mokim acher. Derech klal, the more you learn Gemara, the more you discover that the places you expect to understand a certain, at least the agada of the Masechta, is not to be found in the Masechta. You would expect, where would you find all the divrei agada about marriage? You'd expect to find it in the Masechta Kedushin, right. But it's not there. Where is it to be found in the Masechta Yevamis? Yevamis. And what does it say?
Kedushin is mostly obvious.
Okay, so it says in Yevamis, the Gemara in Yevamis, just paraphrase what it says over here. Kasha Amarava Kasha Ishara Kiyom Sagrid. An Ishara is Kasha Kiyom Sagrid. Shnema Delev Tered Biyom Sagrid. This is quote this pasuk VHS Midyanim Nishtava. Okay, you know, this is very interesting. This Pesik's Parsha, just they're going to Inyalim, but it's in this Parsha Yikra. There was a Maisa Shahoya, a Chosan, there was a Sheva Brachas. And I forgot who the Maisa, I think it was the Satmar, one of the Satmar Rebbes. I don't know if it was Rabbi Yoel, maybe it was one before. I don't know exactly, but there's an old Maisa, and one of the Rebbes sent a message to the Sheva Brachas party. I'll give you a bracha. The hidden mimenu the kumsai. I'm already forgetting.
V'komatz mimenu meloy kumsai.
He sent the bracha. They brought a letter from the Rebbe. Chosh from Shpachas having a Sheva Brachas, one of the big Hasidic dynasties. V'komatz misham meloy kumsai. So no one understood what the Rebbe meant. No one understood, so but there was one person there that said it's posh what the Rebbe meant. It says in the Gemara, a person gets married, the Gemara said, I don't know where the Gemara is, they ask him, Motzah or Motzah? After he got married, they ask him, is it a good shidduch? How is married life? Is it Motzah? Motzah is a code word for Motzah Isha Motzah Toiv, or is it Umotzah Ani Es Ho Isha Mar Mimaves? So he gave a bracha, the komatz mimenu meloy kumso. The marriage is parashas Vayikra. Parashas Vayikra, the pasuk says the komatz. The bracha is it should be the komatz, a komatz, not a segol. The komatz says motza isha, motza toif. That's my bracha to you in your wife. You should find the komatz, not a segol umoitzeh niyasa isha. Cute little sharp word from a rebbe. Okay, let's go to the next verse. Pasuk Tezvav says, Tzof Nechot, Tzof Anuach. Pasuk Tezvav, Tezayin is a continuation. The person who tries, he discovers that he has a bad matzav. And he has a quarrelsome wife, a difficult situation, and he tries to suppress it, to suppress her, to suppress the quarrel. Tzof Nechot, one who attempts to suppress, like Tzofun, Haggadah. One of the simon of the Haggadah is Safun, is to put away in hiding. To take the half of the put away the afikoyim and put it away in hiding. Tsoif Necha, a husband who attempts to hide from the tzibur the fact that he has a difficult situation at home. Sofan ruach, it is equivalent to trying to contain a strong wind. And what will happen? It will ultimately it's going to break. In other words, okay, I don't know, I'm not exactly familiar with all the details, but there has to be some place when there's high pressure. When you apply too much pressure, where whatever you're trying to contain will explode. You have to have an escape. You have to have a place in a compartment, a vent, to allow the air to escape so the pressure should not build up to the point where the object that you are closing should explode due to pressure. So if a person, there's a very strong wind that's trying to blow down your house, I don't know exactly the technique, the engineering technique, but you have to have some type of place, some type of makom to allow the wind to get out. Maybe that's why, you know, airplanes, they come to a point in the front, and everything is designed, even cars. The cars are designed in a certain way to allow, to minimize the degree of drag that the vehicle has against the wind when it's traveling at a high speed. Flaps in an airplane. The flaps in the airplane bring drag in order to bring the plane down. Likewise here, Tzofan Ruach, if you try to suppress the wind, it's only going to be in trouble. So a person who tries to contain a woman who is a balas machloikis, it's like trying to Tzofan Ruach, and what will ultimately happen is the machloikis will explode, and the whole world will know in great detail about this person's trouble. So in other words, let the machloikis be what it is, and don't try to suppress the machloikis because it's not going to be to your advantage. And then the pasuk says, we'll come back and explain that in more detail in a few moments when we read the Mesudas and Rashi. Then the pasuk has another idea of a shemen yimino yikra. Big machloikis Rashi and the Mesudas, according to the Mesudas, means simply that a person smears his body with fragrant oil and he wants to hide. He doesn't want people to get jealous that I can afford to go and anoint my body with oil, and he tries to hide himself. The word according to the Mitzvot, the word Seifnecha is to be applied to the end of the Pasuk as well. A person who is attempting to hide from others the fact that he has anointed his body with fragrant oil, it's impossible. His arm, his right thumb, his right hand will yikra, gives it away. Anyone that comes near his hand, the hand is the part of the body which applies the oil to the other parts of the body, and that part of the body is soaked in oil, and it's impossible to conceal, to contain the fragrance that is coming from his yamin, his right hand. So there's no way one can conceal the fact that his body has been anointed with oil because his right hand gives it away. Likewise, there's no way a person can hide from the tzibur, from the community, that there is no shalom bayis in his home. And if he tries to hide the fact that there is no shalom bayis in his home, adarabah, that will cause everyone to know things that they otherwise would not have known. Let's see the Mitzvot Pasuk Tezayin. Soifnecha hachoyshev, a person who's foolish and makes the mistake and thinks that lahastir hadavar b'fnei habrios, he can hide this matter before the community, that people will not know that he has a difficult situation at home. Doimuhu, it's equivalent to lemastir es haruach lichlo osa, a person that's trying to contain wind. You're trying to suppress the wind. Ki oz yarim bekoiloi niflaos, if a person contains wind, the pressure builds up and it explodes and it makes a very loud sound. I don't know exactly what Rashi is.
You let the wind out of a balloon.
Yeah, it explodes. That's what it means. But see, I think even more, if you put too much wind, too much air in a balloon, it explodes. Pops.
Out of a small place.
Yeah.
It whistles. That's how you make a whistle.
When there's too much pressure and the object explodes, it explodes. It makes a very loud sound.
Oziarian whistles.
Ozyarim bekoiloi niflaos. That's similar. It means over here that when there's too much pressure, and then the wind escapes in one moment, it creates a very loud sound. So this is a mashal for an attempt to suppress machloikas. V'chein ba'alas midyonim, if a person has a wife that argues with him, kol oid sheyirtze l'chastiras adavar, the more he tries to suppress her, to contain it, he ma'sefes v'hilechas, that causes her to get more angry. She'll complain, you're trying to control me. I actually heard this someone yesterday was complaining about his wife was unbelievable. Hashkacha pratis. He was complaining that his wife complains that he controls her, that he is trying to control her, and he claims it's not so. I'm not trying to control you. I'm trying to do something for your benefit. The more a person tries to contain a machlokes, the more the machlokes spreads and becomes public. Next part of the Rashi, b'shemen kamo ha'moshech atzma b'shemen. The person smears his body with oil, fragrant oil. Im yirtze lahalim, if he wants to conceal this fact from his friends, lo yuchal. It's impossible. The intensity, the potency of the fragrant oil that is found on his right hand is intense, where there's no way in the world he can hide this. Lo yuchal ki yadoi hayimonis, the right hand that was used to smear the oil on the remainder of his body, asher yimshach ba es yimshach ba asher yimshach ba hi tachlis al hamashicha, it calls out al hamashicha ki hi nosenes reach l'chol hakarov. It produces fragrance to anyone that comes in its vicinity. The chain, the same idea, this according to Rashi in the Mitzudos, the second half of the pasuk, just a repetition of the first half of the pasuk. The chain, i'efshar lahalim merivas o'ish, it is impossible for a person to contain the quarrelsome nature of ha'isha, of a woman that he's fighting with. Now there's also a principle, this principle is also very true in the laws of Tumah V'Tahara. We know that if in case where there's Tumas Hames, there's a dead body, or there is a kazayis in the vela, or there's a majority of a skeleton, if there is, it is contained, if there is a container on top of it, and there is a hefsik of one tefach between the mace and the board, or an object that's put on top of it, the tumah is contained. Okay, the tumah is contained. Who's not coming? The tumah is contained. If there is tumah inside tumah sames. And we have a rule that if there's a mace, the tumah is oyle adle rakia, goes all the way up to Shemayim. In Eretz Yisrael years ago, they would do this, all the different issues. They would fly over cemeteries. So Kohanim had to go put on a whole costume. They had this whole the issue. So they tried to accommodate the Kohanim. So they tried not to fly.
You have two flights, I think. The same with the Nifter and the Dekhud Elal.
Yeah.
There's only two flights. They have an oil b'tachayim.
Well, that's the mace. That's the mace itself. Okay, we'll come to that. But normally, if there is a mace, the mace is tumas oila ala rakia. But if you contain the tumah with a hefsik of one tefach, that hefsik of one tefach contains the tumah, because you're giving the tumah room to breathe. But if you pressurize the tumah by pushing the container less than a tefach from the mace, then it bursts forth and it's oila ala rakia. That principle in ruchnius is in tumah, koichat tumah is exactly what it's saying over here, al derech hateva. If there's wind, there's pressure, and you let the pressure, you let the air out, you let a person let off some steam, very good. So the steam goes off and the world doesn't come to an end. But if you try to put too much pressure to suppress the steam that's coming out to a degree, a person is frustrated and you don't let him vent at all, you try to suppress it, adrava, that caused the person to explode, and there becomes even a greater degree of sound and machlokes. Okay, now there's another Rashi over here. It says something very, this a little bit different at the end of Rashi. Rashi says tzofnecha tzofan ruach. Rashi for some reason says that we're dealing with a woman that's a balas machlokes midyanim is because she is mezane. She's committing adultery. She's having relations with other men. And Rashi over here says that mish shesovash l'shoimra mi tiz noiseha, a person, a husband who thinks that he can guard his wife from being mezane, if he knows that his wife is indeed is not faithful, and he says, okay, I'm going to prevent you, I'm going to do things to prevent you from being mezaneh, it's going to backfire. That's how Rashi interprets the Pshat in this pasuk. We're not just dealing with the machlokes, we're dealing with the machlokes because there are issues. There are issues that she is mezaneh. Misha sovesh l'shema mitiz noisecha tzufoines ruachihi. It's like you're trying to contain wind. Kishem sheyevsha litzvon ruach. Same way it is impossible to contain wind. The pressure will build up and it will escape. Kein hi loy titz bena. You're not able to contain a person who wants to do an Aveira. If a person wants to do an Aveira, he will succeed. You can have all of the filters and all of the best technology. The person wants to get around it, you will get around it. So now, okay, that's really what it says. Okay, now Rashi then says the Shemin Yimina Yikra, Koirehu Hatsaras Lovay Olaf. A person that continues to live with a woman that argues with him continuously is inviting tsaras to come upon him, because he's going to fight with her, and that's going to lead to lashon hara, motzi shemra, with machlokes and all. And the punishment for motzi shemra is lashon hara is tsaras. And what is the end of a mitzvah? What's the last step of the mitzvah after he's a mitzvah and it's muchlat, and then the tsaras departs, and then he's muskar. He has to be he's sofer 7 days. But then the very end of the process is they pour upon his thumb the behoinis yado oil. They apply oil to his big thumb, his big toe, and to his earlobe. So here it says, "Shemen yimino yikra." A man that continues to quarrel with his wife, it will come lidei lashon hara, and lashon hara leads to tsaras, and tsaras he has to first be quarantined, and so on and so forth. And the very end of the process is when the kohen will apply to his right thumb oil, aloig shemen. That's how Rashi interprets this end of the pasuk. V'shemen yimino yikro. He's inviting the shemen yimino, the oil that comes to his right thumb, that comes from tsaras. Korihu hatsaras lavo. He is inviting tsaras to come, olav, upon him, ad sheyigreshena, until he divorces her. What do you mean? It's causing tsaras. Kimitzara hametaher b'shemen beboen bebohein yadoi hayimonis. The end is you pour the oil on the right hand. Okay, let's go to Pasik Yud Zayin. Barzel Bevarzel Yochad V'ish Yachad Pnei Re'eh. So this can be interpreted two ways, either a positive or a negative. According to the positive interpretation, it refers to Shnei Talmidei Chachamim, just like two swords sharpen one another, two metal swords, each one can be dull, but when you rub them against each other, each one becomes sharp. Likewise, two Talmidei Chachamim, when they argue in learning, each one becomes sharper, they become sharper one another. So the Moshel is Barzel Bevarzel Yochad, just like when you take two pieces of Barzel and Yochad, you rub them one against the other, you each one intensifies the sharpness of the other one. Likewise, v'ish yachad p'nei re'ehu. When one man, together with the face of his friend, goes at it in matters of halacha, each one becomes sharper and sharper. Let's see the mitzvahs pasuk yitzayin. Barzel kemosh haloit haloitesh. Barzel hasakin be'acher. A person sharpens the barzel hasakin, the iron of the sakin be'acher, against another sword, another piece of barzel. Nases chada ushenuna. Each sword becomes sharp, becomes sharper. Cain, the nimshal is yichadadu ish pnei re'ehu. One person can sharpen his fellow. What does that mean? Ratzalaymar talmidei chachamim hayoyshum yachad ve'oiskim b'torah hinei nechadadim ze. Each talmid chacham sharpens the other one. Rashi says the same thing. Yachad pashal gitzad yachad pnei re'ehu yachad. Together, talmidei chachamim mechadedim ze behalacha. Okay, that's the pashup shah and the pasuk. We're dealing with something on a positive level. Mm-hmm. However, there are multiple midrashim that interprets this in reference to two adversaries. What?
See, yachad has two meanings.
Okay.
It means they work together.
Okay.
It also means in the sense of sharpening. Vayichad Yisrael.
Vayichad. So very good. So you want to say the deeper meaning over here is yachad means to sharpen. Aha. Barzel bevarzel yachad means to sharpen. To sharpen.
That's why Rashi says it.
The
Mechad means sharpen. Barzel, barzel, yochad. One piece of barzel sharpens the other.
No, Malvi brings down the Chazal.
Harbe Rabbi may Rabbi Yisrael mi Talmidai mechaverai.
Why? Because the Talmidim always
ask questions. The Talmidim are trying. They ask questions. So that they sharpen. They sharpen one another. Okay, the Talmidim sharpen the mind of the Rebbe. Now, however, there are multiple midrashim which interpret this in the it's not negative, but they interpret this in reference to two adversaries. For example, Moshe and Paro. Moshe and Paro were at each other's throats. They were arguing. It says the Pharisee said, Moshe uParo harasha shahayu misnakshin ze im ze bidvarim. Moshe says, Hashem says, send out my people, let my people go. And Paro says, Ni Hashem Asher Eshma B'Koloi. And the dialogue was a very contentious dialogue. And just like Barzal B'Barzal, he's dealing with powers. Paro was the power of the land. He was the Barzal of Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu representing Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, two swords, one against another. In other words, war. In war, Barzal, one sword comes up against another sword. Barzel, the Barzel Yochad, just like there's an intense battle of Barzel, Barzel Yochad on the battlefield, likewise, Ish Yachad Pereehu, we find that throughout Tanakh, many situations where there were different individuals that were fighting one another. He brings down here a mashal that really has, I can't figure out what it has to do with it. It's a cute mashal. I'll just tell you the mashal. I don't know what it has to do with the pasuk, but there's a marshal, a king says to a servant, go out to the market and buy me fish. Buy me some fresh fish. Froin's fish. Buy me some fresh fish. He comes back and he gives the king fish, and the king smells the fish, and the king says, Fashtungen the fish. How dare you? I'm the melech. How dare you bring me Fashtungen the fish? So the king says to the servant, I'm going to punish you. I'm giving you a choice. You have one of three punishments. Either you eat the fish, you'll get a taste of your own medicine, you eat the fish, or I'm going to whip you 100 lashes, or pay me, I'll fine you $100,000 fine. So the person says, I'll eat the fish. I mean, that's the lightest, that's the least of my problems. $100,000 is a lot of money. And to be subject to 100 lashes will take me a year to recover in the hospital. I'll eat the fish. So he begins to eat the fish. And it's so morose. It's so disgusting. He can't tolerate eating the fish. So he has to stop 80% through his meal. And he says, you know what? I'll take the malchus. I'll take the malchus. It's just so disgusting. So they start whipping him. And they're whipping and whipping. And he has to get 100 lashes. He gets up to 80. He says, give me one more, I'm dead. I can't take this anymore. I'll pay the money. And in Chanam, he pays, he has to pay $100,000. So what was the end? The end was, he got all three. He got all three. He ate the fish, he got the malchus, and he lost the money. So Chazal say, when Paro argued with Moshe, again, I don't know what this has to do with this pasuk of here, Hashem said Paro ended up getting all three. The end was, Moshe says to Paro, let my people go. Let them leave. And Paro says, I'm not letting them go. So what happened in the meantime? Number one,
you'll get beaten.
He got everything. Laku, he ended up, well, he got the 10 makos. And then he got also, he had to give away all his money. The Bizas Mitzrayim. Vayishalu ish me'eshreyu me'eshachunta klechesiv lezav. They had to give away all their money. And they also, they were all, they left anyway. And then when the day was over, the Klal Yisrael anyway left Mitzrayim. So that the stubbornness of not giving, surrendering, immediately will ultimately lead to a greater punishment. This medrash appears in Bereishis Rabbah Samach Tes Beis, and it interprets as a reference to this pasuk: Barzel b'Barzel Yochad, sharpening the ish yachad pinei. Maybe we'll talk about sharpening. There are many steps to sharpen. When you sharpen something, there are many stages. I'm not sure exactly. All right, let's go further.
Just as that member said, if you insist on continuing to fight,
Yeah.
Inevitably, the more you fight, the more you're going to suffer.
The more you're going to suffer. So what is, so what's that mean? The bars, the bars means the more you sharpen a sword, the sharper it gets. The more you, all right, that's maybe what it means. Bar, just like bars, the bars, it's not a one, it's not one size fits all. It's the more you sharpen the sword, the more the sharper it gets. Likewise, when you fight with someone else, the more you're going to suffer. You're not just going to suffer one punishment; you're going to suffer multiple punishments. Okay, next pasuk yudches neitzer te'ena yechal pirya v'shomer adonav yichubot. So Rashi learns this pasuk. I'm not sure how the Mitzudos he learns. He adds something into this pasuk. Neitzer te'ena means a worker, a shomer. He has a job, and the job is you get paid. You get paid by the hour. Pay minimum wage. Minimum wage, what's minimum wage today? $8, $9?
$8.75
in New York State? $8.94 didn't they recently raise it? $8.75 minimum wage? So the whatever it is.
The bar means that the knife is not sharp enough for whatever you need to do. You sharpen it, you use it, and then put it away. You're not going to sharpen it now. More and more dull.
Yeah.
Eventually, you're gonna have to sharpen it anyhow. You're gonna have to sharpen it three times as much before you put it away. In other words, but para, if you would have listened the first time, you would have gotten whatever you got.
But say again, if you don't sharpen the knife right away.
If you sharpen it right away, you use whatever you needed. You put it away.
Put it okay.
You
worry about it.
Now, if you wait, keep using it to whatever other things, and then you decide you need to use the knife. You have to sharpen it all the way. It became even more and more...
Even more dull. Even more dull.
Duller. So you have to sharpen all three times for that one particular...
Uh-huh. Time. So you might as well do it right away. Same idea. Power would have sent it right away. He would have avoided all of this, the punishment. Okay. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Neitzer teina, according to the parish of the Mitzudos. The Mitzudos learns we're dealing with a worker. A worker is guarding a fix, and he's being paid. He's being paid a salary with benefits. But there are also perks, and there are fringe benefits. And what are the perks and fringe benefits? You also get to eat the figs. If you work in a restaurant, you work in a whatever it is, not only do you get paid for your services, you get to take home free food. You have dinner every night. That's a lot of money. You have dinner, lunch, breakfast, you can take home food for your family. So they are, so it's a good deal. So it's exactly what it says. Shomer teina, neitzer teina. You have a person who's a guardian. It's not the pasuk on the pasuk. If not for the mitzvah, you wouldn't think that's what it means. But here it means neitzer teina. I am a guardian. I'm being paid for my work. So it's no different than if I'm a computer analyst. I'm being paid. But here, since you're guarding the figs, guess what? Yoichal pirya, you'll get fringe benefits, you'll also get to eat the fruits. And likewise, v'shoimer adoinav, if I am I work for the Secret Service, I'm a bodyguard, yichubot, I'm an honored person, because the kavod that is applied,
as long as you don't get drunk,
the kavod that is given, well, you find this by the gabbayim. Isn't it very bizarre that you have gabbayim that become rebbes after the rebbe dies? There are stories like that. You have a rebbe and he has a gabbai. What's the gabbai? The gabbai has no yichus. The gabbai has no talmud chacham. What's the gabbai? And then all of a sudden, when the rebbe goes, all of a sudden,
that's the way you understand.
But they take these gabbaim when they're very young, when they're freshly minted. And
they're molded by
but they're not in learning. They're not. They spend the whole day running around and
some rabbis, they take some, the Gabbai teaches the Rebbe how to be
the Gabbai teaches the Rebbe how to be
the Gabbai that taught the Rebbe.
Who taught the Rebbe all the tricks of the trade? Alright.
The Munkachas. The Munkachas is Gabbai with the Munkachas is Gabbai.
And okay, he taught him all the tricks. How to read Kvitloch.
No, Kvitloch he learned by another rabbi.
Another rabbi. How to read Kvitloch. Okay. But this is what it says at the end of the pasuk, that v'shomer adoinav, a person guards his master, not only will he be paid for his services, yichubot, the kavod that's given to the Rebbe, will rub off on him. He will also be an honored person.
With him and everybody gets up.
Stands up. Who are they standing up for? They're standing up for the rabbi, or they're standing up for the gabbai. So that's what the Mesudas here says, Noitzer Kamoi Hashoymer Ilan Te'ena, a person who guards. Yes, the Medrash applies this to Yoshua, applies this to many people. We'll discuss them in a few moments. But first, let's see the Mitzudos. Hashem Kumbay Hashemer Ilan De'ina Halayoychal Piria Noisaf Al Hasachar. More than the wages he's paid for being a guard. That's a chiddush. That's not. I don't think that's the average way you learn a pasuk on the pasuk. Person, it means say you're being paid in addition for your services. You're also going to eat the fruit. Cain, furthermore, Hashoymer Adoinov, Yoichal Pri Gmul Ma'asav. What does that mean? He'll also eat the fruit of his deeds. Ki Od Mechubud Min Ha'adon. He will also, in addition to being paid for his services, will be honored Min Ha'adon from the master. The master will bestow upon him honor, or the honor of the master will rub off on the servant, the guardian. Noisav Al Hatashlumin, in addition to the payment he receives for his services. Rashi says, Yochal Piria, the Chain, furthermore, Shemadon of Yechubod, the Yochal Pri Malolov, he will eat the fruit, Malolov, the fruit of his deeds. For guarding his master, not only will he receive payment, he'll also receive honor. The honor of the master will also rub off upon him. Now, this pasuk is said in the front. Now, there are many, many mamare chazal. First of all, we interpret this in reference to divrei Torah. A person that's noitzer teina means a person who guards the Torah. Yoichal piria will eat its fruits. Where will eat its fruits? So some say the fruits are in olam haba, and some say elu dvarim shadam ochel perosem olam hazeh ve'akeren kayem esloy olam haba. So whatever it means in this world or the next world, but it means that a person is over here in the pasuk, the teina is a for the Torah, for Torah and mitzvahs. A person that is a shomer Torah mitzvahs will merit reward for his effort, for his labor. For shomer adonav, a person that's a guardian for his master, which refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you guard the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You stand up for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor. You don't tolerate nonsense in this world, people who do averos. Yichubad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ultimately reward the person that he will be an honored person in this world. Now, let's take that medrash alone, and the word that here, the mashal of Te'ena, is a mashal for Torah. And this is very interesting. There are multiple midrashim which ask, why is a fig the ideal mashal for divrei Torah? Whatever happened to the good old pomegranate? Whatever happened to the cucumber? Whatever happened to the apple, the tapuach, the eitz hadas, the gefen? There are so many different things that you can find references in the Chazal that are mashalim for a Torah. Why here does this pasuk focusing specifically on the te'ena? So there are multiple answers. One answer is a te'ena. I'm not sure if this is how this is correct today, but a te'ena has no psoilas. Most other fruits, there is psoilas. There are seeds, grapes. Grapes have seeds. I know today they make grapes that don't have seeds, but derech klal, grapes have seeds. Go through every single fruit of pomegranate. There's flesh, there are seeds. I'm not sure of the exact details, but Chazal tell us that derech klal, figs have no psoilas. You can eat the entire fig, the entire fig through and through. Likewise, Torah is pure. There is no psoilus. Every single ois, every tag in the Torah has a lesson, has a meaning, and that's why we compare it specifically to a te'ena. Period. That's one idea. Another idea.
Psoilus means
waste. Waste product. Enochnami. Every food has a different part. The different fruit, either the shell or the seeds, the klipas. There, every food.
Saying that you can, even the leaves of a teina you use for clothes. Because other
Marishan use it for clothing, okay. But is that true today that when you have figs, you eat the entire fig?
Yeah.
The seeds are eaten, everything is eaten. That you eat. Okay. So this is what it says. Figs is a unique type of fruit. I know there are other types of fruit which similarly also eat the entire thing, so you have to understand what it means. So maybe it means what it means exactly. But this is what it says in Chazal. Figs are unique. There is no waste product. Likewise, in Torah, there is no waste. Every single letter of the Torah has meaning, has value, and has a moral, has something to learn from. Okay, another idea that Chazal gave, that te'ena has a unique quality where it does not ripen at one moment in time. it gradually, the figs on the tree, some ripen early, some ripen later. In contrast to other fruits, they all ripen at the same time. It doesn't mean in one moment, it can mean over a week, over a day, but figs, you come today, these figs have ripened, you come later, these figs have ripened, you come 2 weeks later. And in fact, when it comes to laws of Bikurim, Chazal tell us, Bikurim, you go out to the field and you look at the figs. And the figs, oh, this fig now has ripened. And you tie a blade of grass around that particular fig. That fig is designated for Bikurim, because this was the first fig to ripen. The other figs are late bloomers. So likewise, in Torah, there are different, now this is subject to interpretation, a person when he learns Torah in every tkuf in his life, will he have an appreciation for a different miktsoya in Torah. When a person is young, this section of Torah now has application, has meaning, has special meaning. When he gets a little bit older, there's another area of Torah which is important for this point in his life. When he gets older, when he gets married, when he has children, when he has grandchildren, when he gets older, when he prepares for the Olam HaEmes, at every single point in his time, he will be able to look back at what he has learned in the mitzvos and find something that is fitting for the time, for the moment. Unlike other matters in life, where it's for a very particular time, a person studies, takes a course in some type of a science, it's good for at a particular point in time, a particular area. But it's not something which you can use continuously throughout your life and every different stage in your life. So that's another idea of why we focus specifically upon the figs.
In the Marsh time, the Ainim commonly were used dried up.
Pressed figs, or well, many fruits, they were dried, they were different types of fruits. They preserved it.
An enhancement that was better
to
dry it up.
To dry the figs. You put it away for later. You prepare now, and something you can use at a later point in time. A press of figs, a round. They were round. Yeah. So that's why figs here. There are many qualities, unique qualities about the figs which are used as a mashal for the Divrei Torah. Okay. Now in reference to people, this pasuk is applied to numerous people in the Midrashim. Most popular is Yehoshua. Yehoshua was selected to be Moshe's successor, and in fact, according to the Medrash, Hashem himself said this pasuk to Moshe Rabbeinu after the Benos Tzolofchad approached Moshe and said, it's not fair that our father died and did not have sons, why should we not also inherit Chelik in Eretz Yisrael? So Moshe asked Hashem, what should I do? And Hashem said, Nechnami, Benos Tzolofchad also will receive a Chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Moshe then said, if these people, Benos Tzolofchad, if they get a Chelik, it's also only fair that my children, Gershon and Eliezer, should inherit my gedula, my position. So Moshe asked Hashem, I want to give over my gedula to my children, like Aaron. Aaron gave it over to Elazar and Isamar. I also want to give it over to my children. Hashem said to him at that. So according to the Medrash, Hashem's response was, Noitzer te'ena yoichal piria. Who was the Noitzer Te'ena? What?
This was Yeshua.
Well, that's it applies more specifically to the Noitzer Te'ena. The Medrash quotes this pasuk. Hashem's response. Did Hashem Mamash say these words? I don't know. The Medrash says he did. The Medrash says, Amalek HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this pasuk. Noitzer Te'ena Yoichal Piria. And the very, very powerful words, Bonecha Yashu Lehem V'lo Osku B'Torah. Your children, Moshe Rabbeinu, were not in the Beis Medrash. They were not sitting and learning. And therefore, they don't deserve to inherit your greatness. But Yoshua, who will Yomush Yoshua Mitoicha Oil, but Yoshua, who is the Noitzer Te'ena, Yoshua Harbe Sheirescha.
It's more for the Shemer Adayim Vichu.
I know, I hear what you're saying, but for whatever reason, the Medrash only applies to the meaning of the pasuk. You're right, I agree with you. I don't know the answer.
Pinchas needed a special thing to make him a Kayan because he also wasn't this Medrash. He knew how to use a sword.
He was a Kanoi.
But he knew how to use a sword. He didn't pick it up out of the air.
So
he was in the Medrash. many judo players in
Tel Aviv. Not Mukhrach. I'm not so sure that's correct. But whatever it is, this is the pasuk Hashem applied to Yoshua, and therefore Yoshua, it's interesting what it says here in the Medrash. Yoshua harbe shereischa. He served you. Vaharbe cholak loy kovod. Okay, and he gave you honor. Everyone knows this, that he would arrange the chairs. He spread the mats. I think that means to sit down on. There were mats they sat down on. And hoyel vuhu sheirescha b'chol koychoi kedaihu sheyishamish es yisrael she'enayim abet scharai. So we learn, I guess so. Well, the pasuk says lo yomush Yoshua mitoycha oil. The main thing about Yoshua was he did not leave the Beis Medrash. And the Gemara says kach lechos Yoshua ben Nun l'kayim ashnemar noitzer te'eno yoychal pirya.
That's why the Gaboyim become the rabbis.
They do the Safsalim, they take all the money. Kvitlach.
He became a multi-millionaire.
Yeah?
From being the Rebbe's
guy. Why? Well, why? What's, how do you become a multi-millionaire?
Kvitl money.
He got the Kvitl money?
Well, you write the Kvitl for the Chassid,
yeah.
Go into the Rebbe, yeah. Get a tip for it.
A tip, really?
Many tips.
Uh-huh, interesting.
In the words where we did become.
Okay, so that's the first person. Who else does this pasuk apply to in the eyes of Chazal? It was applied to David. David HaMelech. The Beis HaMikdash was named after David. When you walk into the Beis HaMikdash, there was a big plaque. The big plaque said, Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis LeDavid. David, he didn't build the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, Hashem did not allow him to build the Beis HaMikdash. Because he wanted Susha Moshech, that was a kavod, but in Echnaim, Susha Moshech, we're not supposed to say Alam. Bavur, David Avdecha, the doors did not open. So David HaMelech, he got the kavod. Why was the Mikdash called Al Shem David in multiple ways? Because David was Shomer Noitzer Te'eno Yoichal Pirya. He did everything in his power to build the Beis HaMikdash, to purchase the land, to lay out the blueprints, to speak to God HaChayzen, Nosan HaNavi, to properly prepare for the Beis HaMikdash, and that's why he was called after his name. A third person who got credit in the Torah was Bezalel. Bezalel, Vayas Bezalel Es Ha'oroin. Even though everyone in Klal Yisrael contributed their gold for the Aron, and Atzei Shidim, only Bezalel got credit for the Aron because Bezalel was Moiser Nefesh. What was the Mesiris Nefesh? That's another discussion. But Gzuntait, that's he got credit. A third, fourth person in the eyes of Chazal got credit, and as we apply the Pasuk Noitzer Teino Yochal Pirya, is Moshe Rabbeinu. The Mishkan was called after the name Moshe Rabbeinu. The Pasuk says, Sahi Biyoim Kalois Moshe. L'hokim es HaMishkan, the Medrash says, L'kayim HaShenemar, Shoymer Noitzer Teino Yochal Pirya. Moshe was supervised every part of the building of the Mishkan, just like the Beis HaMikdash was called Al Shem David, the Mishkan was called Al Shem Moshe Rabbeinu. So we have a sacha called four people to whom Chazal applied this pasuk, Noitzer Te'enin, most famously is Yoshua. We apply it to Bezalel, to Moshe, and to David. Okay, next pasuk. Pasuk Yotes, Kemayim, Ponim, Laponim Kain Lay for Adam La Adam. Another very well known pasuk. The same, just like when you look into the water, you see yourself. Who is the first person we find in Chazal to use water as a mirror? Avraham Avinu. He saw Sarah. He didn't know your dad. Now I know you're a beautiful woman. It's a pelvic. Avraham was a chassidish rebbe. He didn't look at his wife.
Yes.
Not mistaken. I once heard someone darshan give a drush on this. What does it mean that Avraham Avinu, he looked, Avraham Avinu, what happened? Okay, I broke it. No, Avraham Avinu, he looked in the water and saw his wife. It means when you look at a person who alive, not in the mirror, you look at a person, you see them in action. When you look at a person's not stationary. You see them doing chesed. You see them doing You see them serving Hashem. You see them involved in life. You don't look at a person, a child, a spouse, as an object of beauty. You see them as an active participant in life. When you look at a person in a picture, someone gives you a picture of the person, oh, that's what you really look like? How often do we get back pictures? You want to go to a simcha, and someone later shows us a picture, even like a week later, and you look at the picture, at yourself, and you say, that's really what I look like? It's time to go on a diet. You didn't know this? You didn't know that's what you look like? The answer is, when you see, well, you look in the mirror every day, you see yourself, you still sense yourself, exactly. Because when you're looking at another person, you're not looking them as an object. You're looking them as an active participant in life. And you look at their ma'asim tovim. That overwhelms you, that overtakes you. When you look at a picture, you don't see them in action. You just see their physical appearance. You see them as a davar gashmi. Avram Avinu, he saw his wife all the time. He saw Sarah all the time. But he saw her involved in chesed, Avraham megayres ha'anoshim, Sarah megayres sanoshim. When he saw her in the babua, in the mirror, it was an accident. They were walking through some place and they stopped and he saw Sarah. He didn't see her as a person. He saw her as an object. Because he saw her in the reflection in the mirror. Oh, you know something? I never realized that when we come to Egypt, they don't look at you as a person. In Egypt, they couldn't care less what goes on. Chesed, Avodas Hashem. That's not an issue. In Egypt, every single thing is an object of taiva. And they're going to look at you as an object of taiva, not as a human being. I look at you as a human being because we're a team. We're involved. We're busy. We're busy people. We're a team. But when you look at a picture, you know, you see this picture, this is a problem. This is going to be a problem. We come to a place when they don't look at people as human beings, and they look at people as objects of taiva. So this is the much deeper interpretation. It doesn't mean, it's very far-fetched to say, Shudah Shal Mikra, like they teach in Cheder, that he never looked at his wife. She wore a burqa, and he never looked at her. He never saw her. That's not Judaism. It can't be. It can't be that's the shot. Okay, so let's go. Okay, let's go further. Kimayim haponim laponim. So here the pasuk says, when you look in the when the kimayim, just like water, haponim that turns, or haponim that reciprocates, that reflects. Haponim here means it reflects. Laponim, your reflection. Whatever you show to the water shows back at you. If you're smiling and you look in the water, you see the water smiling back at you. If you're sad and you look in the water looks back, the water has a, you see yourself sad. So you don't need water. Cain, the same thing is true. Lev ha'adam la'adam. The heart of one man to another man. If I look at you in an angry way, you'll look back at me in an angry way. You will reciprocate. If I am kind to you, you will reciprocate by being kind to me. If I am happy with you, you'll be happy with me. A person, another person, will always adapt, responds to the midos of someone else. We all know that to be true. When we deal with people, we see a person right away. You change. Every person is a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Multiple doctors. You deal with the relationship every person has with another person is different. It's not one size fits all. Why? Because you, when you see someone else, you're automatically responding. You are responding to the way they treat you. They treat you this way, so I have, this is the way I deal with this person. I move on to the next person in the street. He deals with me in this midah. That's how I have to deal with him. This is the way, and it takes one person to be a little more aggressive. The more aggressive one is the one that's going to change the relationship. There's always the noisane, the aggressor, and the mashpia makabel. There's always going to be the one that's the mashpia, is the one that has the ability to change the relationship. And either of the two can be the mashpia. It all depends on the situation. So let's see the mitzvah of Rashi. The mitzvah over here says, "Kemayim kemoder chamayim, marim es haponim b'dem laponim hamistalkim ba." It responds. The reflection it shows is identical to its source. Im soichakois, soichakois. If a person smiles, the water smiles back. back. The im atzevos atzevos. Kane similarly leiv ha'adam la'adam im liboy toiv al chaveru. Then yitiv gam liboy. The other person will respond in kind. Will also have a good heart towards you. The imra. If one is mean to his fellow, tera gam he. That the recipient will also be nasty. Rashi. Rashi says, "Kites kamaim halalu aponim aponim shatam maru l'sechan kain marus l'cha." Whatever you, the way you look is how it looks back at you. Kain leif adam l'adam chaveroi l'fima chaveroi l'fima shadam yodei shechaveroi oyavo kain hu maru l'oyponim. If you know that your friend loves you, you will reciprocate. If you know that your friend hates you, you will also reciprocate with hate.
What, the heart drives the emotions? Is that
the heart drives the emotions. It's the way you deal with people, they deal with you. That's just, it's very simple. You could, if you're a nice person, even though in your heart you may not love that person, but you act in a con, you can fake it. No, you fake it. If you are just good to another person, they will reciprocate.
Why the heart
is, I guess it's only that much you can fake. You have to work. You have to work on being sincere. If you're not sincere, obviously, you can tell. So there's only that much you can. There's only the heart. I guess means sincerity. If you deal with a person long term, if you have just an acquaintance, so if you're not sincere, you can fake it for 5 minutes. You can fake it. Oh, hello. How are you? Have you been? Okay, it's the same idea. I don't know the answer. I think it's the same idea. If you're going to be kind to another fellow, he will reciprocate. If you're going to be nasty, he's also going to be nasty. You distance people, distance themselves from nasty people. There's no chidushim here.
Society that are very aloof, scientists, others who are very emotionless. They have no emotion. It's not that they're deliberate.
So people don't like those. People don't have nothing to do with those people. I know a lot of those type of people. They're very smart. They have no emotion. They're cold. They're cold as can possibly be. So they don't have any friends. They have their family. People who have no choice but to.
To put up with them.
That's how it is. And then there are people that are very outgoing, they're very kind. You know, you see Rachman al-Islam by a base ovel. It's very telling. Who comes to a base ovel? There are certain people, even famous people, you come to the base ovel, you get a sense there's no one really here. You know, it's a struggle to get a minion, especially when it comes to minion. That's the real test. An ovel, what kind of minyanim does he have during his avelus? There are some people, places packed. And there are some people, no matter what you do, you can't schlep in a minyan. And it definitely says a lot. My father was a rav for many years, and it was always a major issue. Every day, avelim all the time. Those years, it was, you know, it was a younger crowd. People were losing their parents. And when there was an avel, was it a struggle to get a minyan? Mm-hmm. And there are certain very popular people. And if it means 6 o'clock in the morning, there will be 50 people there, 6 o'clock in the morning for the minyan. And then there are people that are just, they're just not popular people for different reasons. And even if you make the minyan at 8:30 on a Sunday morning, you can't, for all the money in the world, you can't get someone to come to the minyan. So, obviously, kemayim ponim el ponim, kain leiv b'nei, why? Because when other people were sitting shiva, these people couldn't care less. They didn't even go pay up shiva call. So I have to reciprocate to you. These are dvarim pshutim. We don't even need psukim for this. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Okay, the next pasuk, Sha'ol va'avado lo tismana, ve'enei ha'adam lo sismana. The grave and Gehenim are never satisfied. Shayaro smitsuyos. Someone once said to me, they always made an impression many years later, that Shayaro smitsuyos. There are always people being born. There are always people being born, and there are always people dying. There's always this world and the next world is shayaros mitzius, a principle in the Gemara. It's a principle in the Gemara. There are people always. Are you going from Galil to Eva Hayarden? The Gemara says shayaros mitzius. There's always traffic. There's always a train. You can always catch a flight. Between this world and the next world, there's always two-way flights. There are people going every single day, and there are people arriving, new arrivals. That's an ace, that's a time. Shayarois mitsuyos. But it says here that the other world, that they're very happy to receive. The grave is very happy, sha'ol, the grave. And here it's even more frightening. Va'avado. Va'avado, according to the mitsudos, is gehenim. Gehenim is open 24/7. There's always new arrivals entering Gehenim. I told you this once before, that there's a certain very, very popular Rebbe Lakewood who said, oh, you have a relative. Where does, oh, he moves, moving to Lakewood. Yeah, this one has a son in Lakewood, a daughter in Lakewood, a cousin in Lakewood. Yeah, Lakewood. It's like Gehenim. Everyone ends up there. At the end, everyone is there. That's what it says. Va'avadoi is Gehenim loy sispana. The pasuk says that is a mashal for a person, the Einei Ha'adam lo sispana, a person that's never satisfied. And about Haiva, Ayav Kesel, Yisba Kesel, never satisfied. His the same degree of his Taiva for more and more, more kavod, more money, is equivalent to the Taiva of the grave and the Taiva of Gehenim. They're never satisfied. They always want more, more, and more. Let's see the Mitzvot Pasukov. Sha'ol Hakever VeHagehenim Einam Sveyim Milakabel Anoshim V'Chein. Likewise, Einei Ha'adam Lo Sispana Min Ha'Oisher. The eye of a man is not satisfied from wealth. V'Choishek and the desires. V'Choishek LaHarbo. So he always wants more and more. Rashi. Just like she'enei ha'adam rasha, Rashi adds here one very powerful word, rasha. According to the Mitzudos, does not say rasha. According to the Mitzudos, you would think it's even the average person. The average person also is never satisfied. Ein adam poiter min olam with a. The person does not leave. The person does not leave this world even half of what he wanted to accomplish. So you would assume this pasuk refers to the average person. Along comes Rashi. Rashi is really taking this from a medrash that no, we're dealing with an adam rasha. And the rasha, he's the one that has no control over his status. But a person, otherwise, it would appear that there are people out there that are indeed satisfied. Adam rasha lo tispena miloshoit achar yetzahara, from following, from swimming after the yetzahara, milumalos tavos, in order to fulfill his desire. There's a very beautiful medrash here. The medrash is another one. It's a Gemara, a Gemara Masechet. The Gemara interprets this pasuk specifically in reference to Alexander the Great. Alexander Mokdon, he conquered the entire world. And it says, it's a very bizarre chazal, you have to have munas hacham what this means. He came to the Pesach of Gan Eden. He found in this world, he found where Gan Eden, the Mokom of Gan Eden. And he demanded that he be allowed to enter. He came to Gan Eden, the Gemara Masechet Talmid, Daf Lamed Beis, ended the Masechet Talmid. Pischuli Baba, open up the door. I want to go into Gan Eden. I want to see what's doing here. Abascal came out and said, sorry buddy, Zeh Hashar LaHashem. Only one who's allowed to enter Gan Eden, not Tzadikim, and you know Tzadik. So he said, Omar Lahoni said, listen, I may not be a Tzadik, but I'm a king. I've conquered the entire world, and that is already enough of a reason why I should be allowed to see what's doing here. Omar Lahon, Ano Nami Malka Ano, Nichshav Chashivna, Havulumidi, at least give me something. Maybe you're right, maybe I don't have a right to enter. I at least want you to give me something, a souvenir from Gan Eden. So they sent out a skull. It's a Gemara. They sent out a skull, a Gulgolas. The skull was very heavy, extremely heavy. It was difficult to haul it away. He was intrigued. Why is this skull so heavy? So he weighed it. and it broke all the scales. He tried to weigh against it all the gold and silver that he had, and anything that he tried, the skull weighed more than all the gold and silver. So he went back to Gan Eden and he asked for an interpretation. What is this all about? So according to the interpretation, it's not clear what the Gemara means, but according to what he interprets the Gemara, the Marshal interprets the Gemara, they said, this skull is your skull. It's your skull, and basically you are the ultimate Baal Taiva. And the ultimate Baal Taiva is never satisfied. It's never satisfied, and that's why it weighs more than all the gold and silver in the world. You may have conquered the entire world, you may possess everything in the world, but you're not satisfied. You want more and more and more. This dead skull, this piece of this nothing, is heavier. And obviously it's a sickness. Why aren't you satisfied? You already conquered the entire world. You have it all already. And yet, what you have is nothing compared to what you still want. But it doesn't exist. What you want does not exist. And that should reveal to you that it's an unhealthy thing. If what you're trying to achieve is not, cannot be satisfied, because you already have everything there is in the world and you still want more, it goes to show that you're a very big Baal Taiva. So he said, what's the solution? He said, the solution is, why don't you just take some dust and put some dust on the eye of the skull? Take some dust, sprinkle some worthless dust. So he took some worthless dust on the eye of the skull, and then the skull became as light as a feather. And the Baskel came out and said this pasuk, Sha'ol va'avadoi loy tispana, the enei ha'adam loy sispana. It's because when man's eye, when man's taiva, his eyes, his desires, which is alluded to in the eye, what he sees, what he wants, is not satisfied, then he'll never be satisfied. It's even worse than the grave and Gehenim, which are continuously taking in neshamos. But if you dull your eyes, meaning that if you remove the taiva of Olam Hazeh, then you will indeed be satisfied. Then it says here in the Gemara, which the only one eye he covered. Amar lo mamai d'hachi, shaklei kalilei afra v'chaisei. Take a small amount of dust and cover it. Does not say how many eyes. La altar tikla, he covered it, and it became white. La alta immediately tikla, he knew its weight. Tchsev sheol va'avado lo sispana, and the pasuk concludes ve'enei adam lo sispana. According to the Marshal explains ve'ramzu lo bezeh perish a pasuk mimi lo tispana sheol va'avado may also adam asher eino lo sispana. Only people who are never satisfied, they only people whose eyes are not satisfied, so they'll never be satisfied. Ramaz Alexander Mokdan Atzma, this is a remiss to Alexander himself. She'oiv kesev azov, kamo she'amru chazal sham. Okay, so this is Medrash on the Gemara on this pasuk. Okay, we'll stop over here.